Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, and for 43 years has been a player and executive in professional baseball and basketball. He's the senior vice president and the co-founder of the Orlando Magic basketball team. He and his wife, Ruth, are the parents of 19 children, including 14 adopted from four other countries. He's the author of over 40 books and one of America's best motivational speakers. His name, Pat Williams. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Pat Williams, the senior vice president and co-founder of the Orlando Magic basketball team. Pat, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you so much, Jack. Great to catch up with you, and thanks for inviting me.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I had two wonderful parents. I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, Jack, and when I was 3 years old, my dad, who was a high school coach and teacher, gave me my first baseball glove. It was a catcher's mitt. And then at the age of seven, after he got back from World War II, he took me to my first Major League Baseball game. June 15th, 1947. The Philadelphia A's played the Cleveland Indians in a doubleheader at Shibe Park, and I woke up the next morning absolutely riveted by the sights and the sounds and the smell of baseball. And I knew at the age of seven exactly what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be a ball player, and every waking minute was dedicated towards that goal. And my mom and dad were supportive of me. They went out of their way to give me every opportunity. They encouraged me and pushed me and helped me, you know, to try and fulfill my dreams. My dad was killed young. I was 22. He was driving home from my college graduation and was killed in an automobile accident. That was 44 years ago this past June. My mother lived to 92. She passed away about a month ago. But had a wonderful full life. So I'm really a result of my parents' input. I would say they were, the two key people in my life.
How did you go from being a player to an executive in professional sports?
Well, that's a good question, Jack. I had a dream come true. I played baseball at Wake Forest. I was a catcher and played on the Atlantic Coast Conference Championship Club in 1962. And I wanted to play pro ball so much. And I had a wonderful friend, Bob Carpenter, the owner of the Phillies, who gave me that opportunity. And I signed a contract. They gave me a $500 bonus and $400 a month. And off I went in June of 1962 to Miami, which was the Phillies Farm Club in the Florida State League. I played 2 years in Miami in that league while working on my master's degree in the off season. But in that second year, it was pretty obvious I was in the twilight of a very mediocre playing career. But the Phillies had other plans for me, and they put a coat and tie in front of me and offered me an opportunity to stay in baseball in the front office. And the real turning point was going to Spartanburg, South Carolina, which was the Phillies Farm Club in the Western Carolinas League. I was 24 years old and arrived there in February of 1965, filled with all sorts of dreams and goals and the philosophy of Bill Veeck churning in my mind, and thus my front office career was launched.
How did you go from baseball to basketball?
Well, all of my goals and all of my dreams and reach was in baseball. I really viewed myself as the general manager of the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Phillies. That's really where I was focused and where I thought I was headed. But I walked into my office in Spartanburg one day, July of 1968. I was in my fourth season there. And there was a message to return a call to a Jack Ramsey. Well, I knew of a Jack Ramsey. He was currently the general manager of the 76ers. He had been the longtime basketball coach at St. Joseph's College in Philadelphia. I never had met him. He didn't know me. But he explained to me that he was trading Wilt Chamberlain that day to the Lakers and that he was going to become the coach of the 76ers, needed somebody to run his front office, and would I be interested? So there I was, 28 years old, geared towards baseball. I flew to Philadelphia. I had a couple of meetings with the owner and with Jack, and after the second meeting, they offered me the job. And I left baseball and moved to Philadelphia as the general manager, as the business manager of the 76ers. And that was the start of a career in the NBA, which now spans 38 years.
You and your wife had four of your own children, and then you decide to adopt. And you end up adopting 14 from South Korea, Philippines, Romania, and Brazil. Why?
Well, for the first 10 years, Jack, I asked myself that same question. I kept hearing all the time about we needed to adopt children that didn't look like us, and I just didn't understand. I didn't want to talk about it. We had three children that had arrived by birth here in our marriage, and you know, that seemed fine by me. I was running ball clubs by then. I had gone from Chicago to the Bulls to a year in Atlanta with the Hawks, back in Philadelphia as the general manager of the 76ers, and life was going well. But at the 10-year mark of our marriage, it became obvious this was going to be it was a very major issue, and I needed to do something about it. So I discovered that South Korea was the one nation on earth at that time you could most readily adopt from. Today it's China and Russia. And I took the initiative, found out that we qualified. And in September of 1983, two little girls, 2 and 3 years old, arrived at the airport in Philadelphia, and they were ours. And we had five children. And then a sixth kid arrived, a birth kid, a year later. We moved to Orlando. And at this point, Jack, I was into it. I was really enjoying it. And as we learned about other children, we just kept saying yes. There was no master plan. No grand strategy, but as we learned about these other children around the world, we said, why not? We can do that. And the end result was we woke up one day, we had 18 children, 14 adopted. There was one year when 16 of our children were all teenagers at the same time, and I've lived to survive it, Jack.
We're talking to Pat Williams, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Pat Williams, who with his wife had 19 children between the ages of 20 to 34. You mentioned, Pat, that at one year, 16 of them were teenagers. What was that like?
Well, that was the year I realized why some animals eat their young, Jack. I bought into the Mark Twain philosophy of raising teenagers. Mark Twain said, when your child reaches 13, put them in a barrel, cut a hole in the barrel to feed them through, and then at 16, he said, seal up the hole. Well, I be careful with that. HRS isn't real high on that strategy. I learned a lot that year, and we've written about it. We wrote a book a little while ago called You've Got to Be Kidding, in which we shared our theories and what we've learned about parenting and raising teenagers. I think the most important thing I can tell parents about those teen years is to keep investing in your children, even though you don't see any return on your investment. I mean, there's some long, tough struggles with teenagers where you're thinking, I'm not getting through. This isn't working. We are failing. Well, you're doing a lot better job than you think you are. And keep investing, keep investing, keep investing, because you are getting through. And even though kids may not acknowledge it or you don't see any signs of that. And what I've really learned is on the other side of 20, you begin to see little signs of life. You begin to see real people emerging. I mean, real human beings are starting to appear before your eyes. And It's all a result of that investing through those teen years. So keep it up, parents. You can do it.
How many bathrooms, how many bedrooms, and how did you feed them?
Well, in the big years, we had 13 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. We had a full-time cook, Dan Littlefield. We called him Dan the Pan. And he would arrive in the morning early and spent the whole day there. I mean, for 5 or 6 years, he worked full-time for us, doing nothing but preparing breakfast to heat up in the morning and all the sandwiches that had to be taken to school and dinner, which had to be prepared every night. It was a massive undertaking. You know, there were years there where our food bill was like $80,000 a year. And obviously I was making the kind of money that allowed us to do it. Couldn't save any of it. You know, it was all going into the lives of these children. But just feeding them alone was a huge undertaking.
How many of them went to college?
They didn't all go. We had 4 of our children have gone on and gotten master's degrees. That was the route they took. Two of the adopted kids, Stephen and Thomas, the twin boys from South Korea, went on to college and have both gotten their master's. Several of the children now older, Jack, are realizing that they need a college education. They didn't think they did. They thought they had all the answers. And now in their early 20s, they have seen the light and are going back to school, and we're helping them get their college degree. It'll take a few years, and it's harder because they're working and they're having to go to school at night, but we're supportive of that. 2 of the boys went into the military and served in the Marine Corps, and David, the oldest of the 4 Filipino boys, was in that first wave coming out of Kuwait in March of 2003, you know, at the start of the war in Iraq. So he was in combat in those early days, so we have great respect for what he did.
One of the first things you did when you adopted each was give them an American name. Why?
Well, that's true. We gave them all names, American, renamed them when they got here, knowing that they were going to grow up in this society and that it would be a lot easier for them to function with an American name. And with the right, I mean, they could easily go back and change that name if they wanted to later on when they became adults. None of them have elected to do that. So and within a few months, Jack, they were quickly assimilated into American life. Their native tongue disappeared fairly quickly, and right now they have no working knowledge of their native tongue, which in some ways is sad. But on the other hand, they are full-fledged, naturalized American citizens, and their home is here in the United States, and they're proud of that.
They're between 20 and 34. How often do you talk to them?
Well, on any given day, there are children issues every day. We had a party on the 4th of July recently, and there were about 10 or 11 of them that were there that night. We have 3 grandchildren now, and it's always fun to see them. But they're scattered. Five of them live in Southern California, one in Boston, a couple in the New York area, one in Pittsburgh. But on any given day, there'll be 4 or 5 of them that we're hearing from on one issue or another. And as the years get on, I get the sense that as parents, we're a lot smarter to our children. Now that they are out there dealing with the real world, and getting cuffed around a little bit, I think they have a greater respect for what their parents know now.
What advice would you give parents about balancing a business career with raising a family?
Jack, that's the key word. It is balance. And we have a tendency as men to swing over too hard on the career side, the job side. And I admit my faults in that area. A world in professional sports absolutely drives you because you're so public and you want to succeed so badly. There's a tendency to overdo it. But I think it can be done. I think you may have to give up some stuff. You may have to give up some fancy vacations or weekend golf games or fishing trips with your buddies because your children need your time. They need your investment. They need to see that you're as enthusiastic and interested in what they're doing as you are with your own life. So you've just got to make it a very, very high priority and make sure that you understand your children need you. They want you to be part of their life, even though as they get older and become teens, they may not show it, but they really do. And so balance is the key word, and you got to be thinking about it every single day. It doesn't happen automatically, Jack. You got to really work at it.
We're talking to Pat Williams. When we come back, we'll ask him about one of the books he wrote, The Warrior Within. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Pat Williams, the author of over 40 books, one of which, Pat, The Warrior Within. What was the inspiration to write that book?
This is the most recent one I've done, Jack. It's the 43rd book that I have been able to write over 30-plus years, and a very stimulating, important book, I think. Long story short, I was speaking in Peoria, Illinois, in early September of 2004, at a church there, and the hurricane was hitting into Orlando, Hurricane Francis, if I recall, lashing into our state, and it was obvious I was not going to get back to Orlando on that Sunday afternoon, so the pastor took me aside, walked me into the airport to make sure I didn't get marooned there, and said, listen, if you want to stay over, you can go to our 7:40 meeting in the morning. I said, what is that? He said, well, the men of the church gather at 7:40 in the morning. I said, why 7:40? And he told me this story, which was quite interesting. He was going through the Old Testament, Jack, came into the book of First Chronicles, which is lists and lists of genealogy, you know, just very dry reading. And in the 7th chapter, the 40th verse, he read about Asher, and he said that as he read here, after 10 verses of genealogy, said of all of Asher's followers, all the people that came after him and his family, were outstanding husbands and fathers. They were strong character people. They had courage, and they were outstanding leaders. And it said there were 26,000 of them. And when I learned that, I said, that's unbelievable. I said, because I'm traveling around the country talking on those very topics and writing on those subjects. And I'd never heard of this man back in First Chronicles. But I got very excited. Anybody that could have 26,000 offspring who were good dads and husbands and had strong character, they were courageous and outstanding leaders. And my immediate thought, Jack, was, this guy had a terrible press agent. I mean, nobody's ever heard of him, and yet what he did was absolutely astounding. So I put a proposal together, and Regal Books in California was interested, and they agreed to do it, and we spent about a year and a half putting the book together, and it's just come out, and I'm so encouraged by the impact it's having. I really want to hope and really feel that this book can make a difference in the lives of men, in that whole area of leading in the home.
What's the secret of having your kids think you're the perfect dad?
Well, I think that's a good question. First of all, you're not their buddy. You are their father, and there has to be a line of respect there. But you also have to be fun for them. You've got to remember that you were fun to live with. You've got to balance discipline and love. There has to be strong discipline in the home. You're running the place. It's your home. The kids are there for 18 years, and you set the rules. But they also have to know that they're loved, and you've got to tell them that. It's called the blessing, Jack, and you've got to pass the blessing on to your children. They need to hear words from your lips, Dad, like, you belong to me, and I'm glad. You're a winner, and I'm proud of you. I love you and think you're terrific. Because if kids don't hear that from their father, there's going to be a bubble in their soul that develops. And that's a very dangerous thing when that happens. And so by blessing your children, you can keep that bubble out of their soul.
We're talking to Pat Williams, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Pat Williams, who has completed 38 marathons in the last 10 years and climbed Mount Rainier. Pat, in the book, The Warrior Within, you talk about the four crucial dimensions of godly manhood. What are they?
Well, let's spend a few minutes on that. First of all, you've got to take your role as husband really seriously. And you've got to invest in your wife, and you've got to pay attention to her, and you've got to uplift her, and you've got to bless her, and you've got to build her up. You need to share with her. She needs massive doses of touching, because every woman in the world has skin hunger, and it's important to hold her hand and put your arm around her and really take that role of husbanding seriously. And then along with it comes the role of being dad. So that's the first side of it. And Jack, I need to tell you this. I wrote a book last year called Coaching Your Kids to Be Leaders. And I interviewed about 800 men and women. And one of the questions I asked was, who was the key person in you becoming a leader? And over and over and over, I got the same answer. My dad, my father. And I'm certainly not dismissing the role mothers play. And I'm certainly not downgrading single mothers, who I think are America's true heroes, but Dad, you're the key guy. So that's the first dimension of manhood. The second is character. Character does count, Jack. And we're living, I think, in a period in our history where there's a crisis of character. We see it every day in the newspaper, in business, in sports, the military, the church, education, and it is worrisome. So we have got to take a stand for character. And I'm talking about old-fashioned stuff like honesty and integrity and maturity and responsibility and a work ethic and perseverance and humility and remembering your influence and having, you know, really a strong, vibrant faith, which is the thread that really makes this whole character thing come together. And then the third dimension is courage. It takes courage to be a man today, Jack, and I'll tell you in one area alone, the area of temptation, because never have men been more pressured by temptation today. The temptation of tobacco and alcohol and drugs and gambling and pornography and illicit sex and money and shopping and Krispy Kreme donuts. I mean, we're bombed by temptation every minute of the day, and it takes courage to stand up and say, I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm not going that route. You know, I know that's the wrong thing to do. It takes courage. And then the fourth dimension is leadership. As men, we are the leaders of our home, and we're called to take leadership roles in our jobs, in the church, in youth sports, PTA activities. Every man is a leader. And so it's important to understand what are the ingredients of a leader. And in this book, in the fourth section of The Warrior Within, I outline the seven sides of leadership. And it doesn't matter whether you were leading in biblical times or leading today, leading during World War II, leading in the military or business or the church or sports, those seven sides have to be there. And so that really is a hot button with me, trying to help and develop and teach men how to become leaders.
Following up, you mentioned single moms. Nearly 24 million American children, that's over a third of all the kids in the U.S., live in homes without their biological father. And in about 40% of those homes, the kids haven't seen their fathers even once in the last 12 months. That's an epidemic. What do we do?
Yeah, that's a real crisis in our country, Jack, and It does impact children's lives. It does leave an enormous gap in their life. And so we've got to train this next generation of men to even though they may not have had good role models at home, we somehow have got to get the word to them about the importance of being a good husband and taking the role of father seriously, and that so much of it is just being there. Taking an interest in your children, investing in them, teaching them, training them, bringing them up the right way, so vitally important. So this current generation may be beyond us, Jack, but we've got to start teaching through our schools and through our churches, through youth works, through boys and girls clubs. We've got to start training and teaching and getting them ready so that we can break this epidemic that has hit our country.
What advice would you give to wives to help make their husbands better dads and men?
Well, that's a good point too, Jack, and women can do that. The first thing is don't nag, you know, don't harangue, because that tends to drive men away. I think we've got to constantly be reminding the men in our lives about the important role that they play. It would be good to get books in front of them, and I know men are not great readers, and that's why I'm writing a book, Jack, called Read for Your Life, that'll be out next year. But women really can encourage and motivate men to understand the role that they play and why it's so important, and encourage them and praise them when they see them do something good. You know, I think men are no different than anybody else. If they are praised and affirm that they're doing a good job, they're going to want to do it more and see if they can be even better. Women can play that role, and the more encouragement men get, I think the better they'll work. The more they'll work at it, the better job they'll do.
What's the most important goal a father should have for his child?
Jack, I think the most important goal is that they become leaders. That hit me a couple of years ago when Warner Books approached me, and they asked me a question. They said, what's the number one desire of parents and coaches and teachers, grandparents, for their children? I guessed around a little bit that they stay out of trouble, that they keep their rooms neat, you know. And finally, the publisher said, isn't it that they become leaders? I never had thought of that. And that left a huge imprint on me, because really, when you get down to it, as parents and grandparents, coaches, teachers, pastors, what we're doing is investing in these children, getting them ready for a life of leadership. And I never had looked upon it that way. So I plunged in for about 2 years working on that book. And when I finished coaching your kids to be leaders, my reaction was, I wish I had written this book 20 years ago. Because I think I would have been a better father if I realized that I was getting my children ready for a life of leadership.
You talk about a choice man. What's a choice man?
Well, I think that, Jack, that comes back to this whole issue of character. In one translation of the Bible, they do talk about choice men. And I think that really comes back to a man of character. Character is who you really are. It's what you are really deep down inside. Reputation is what people think you are. Character is what you really are. And character is what comes out when you're alone, when nobody's watching. And we talked about it a little bit earlier in the interview about the importance of honesty, telling the truth in every situation. And it comes down also to that word integrity. Interestingly enough, in 2005, the number one word that was looked up online in the Merriam-Webster dictionary was the word integrity. I found that fascinating when I learned that, because either people didn't know the definition or they wanted to learn more. But integrity means completeness. It means wholeness. It means there's no breaks in the circle. There's no mask, no duplicity. What you see is what you get. In other words, a man or a woman of integrity, there's only one of them. It comes from the root word integer, which leads to integrated, which means one. So when you talk about a man or a woman of integrity, that means there's just one of them. They're the same person. They're consistent in their approach.
We're talking to Pat Williams. When we come back, we'll ask him about a father admitting his mistakes. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Pat Williams, one of America's top motivational, inspirational, and humorous speakers. Pat, it's so hard in America for anybody to admit they made a mistake. Talk about that.
Well, I think in the area with fathers, Jack, it's okay to do that. We have a tendency that as dads we have to be perfect and that we can't show weakness to our children. We can't show any signs that we have failed. But I think children respect us more when if we goof up or we make a mistake or we don't handle a situation correctly. If we go to our children and apologize and ask for their forgiveness, that's a moment children will never forget, where if they can see dad as being real. And I'll tell you what, I got a lesson in that not long ago. My mother passed away earlier this summer, and we went back for her memorial service to Wilmington, Delaware. Three of the children went, Jimmy, Bobby, and Karen, and Michael, excuse me, four of them. And we had a good time, really, sitting with my sisters. We reminisced. Oh, we relived our youth. It was just a marvelous time. And my four children who were there sat there open-mouthed, like, I didn't know that. You mean Dad was like that when he was a kid? I mean, they kind of got the sense, and they're still needling me. We thought you were perfect. We thought you were flawless growing up. But your two sisters told us the real truth. You know, they got a big kick out of that. And so I think it's important to be real. And if we need to apologize to our children, that's all right. Go ahead and do it, Dad.
You mentioned in the last segment about a book you wrote, The 7 Qualities of Effective Leaders. What are they?
Jack, here's the bottom line on leadership as far as I'm concerned, and I am amazed because it's become such a hot topic in our country. Hardly a week goes by that I don't get another mailing piece about a leadership retreat or a leadership seminar, and books are pouring out on leadership seemingly by the week. But as I read them all and study them and factor them into my 44 years of leadership in professional sports, I'm convinced that there are 7 sides to leadership. The first one is vision. Leadership always begins with vision because leadership is about the future. Men and women who are visionary leaders see the future before it gets here. It's real to them. They see the finished picture. And then secondly, they have the ability to communicate that vision. It's one thing to have a vision, but if you can't communicate it, nothing's going to happen. And so we communicate our vision by having an optimistic spirit. We communicate hope. We communicate inspiration. We communicate motivation. And right along with it, we communicate verbally. We need to talk about our vision in front of other people. And then the third side of leadership are people skills. I ran into Isaiah Thomas not long ago, and I said, what made Chuck Daly such an outstanding coach when he was with the Pistons? And Isaiah said to me, relationships, relationships, relationships. Great leaders have an interest in other people. They have a heart for people. They care about people. They're interested in people. They love people. And then the fourth side is character. Character counts in leadership. And those qualities we've been talking about earlier, Jack, really make a difference in leadership. I don't think you can lead unless you're a man or woman of character. And then the fifth side is competence. Leaders are good at what they do, and that begs the question, were they born that way or were they developed? Well, obviously we all come into the world with different qualities, different DNA, but I really do believe that leadership skills can be enhanced, they can be developed, they can be improved. One of the ways is being committed to being a lifelong learner. And the best way to be a lifelong learner is to be a lifelong reader. President Harry Truman once said, not all readers will be leaders, but all leaders must be readers. And then the sixth side of leadership is boldness. You've got to make decisions. Leaders study, they listen, they gather information, but when it's time to make a decision, they make the decision, they move on, and they don't look back. And then the seventh side that glues this whole thing together, the seventh side is called a servant's heart. These are leaders, men and women, who understand they are not in a position of authority to beat up on people, to intimidate them, to crush them, grind them. You know, that's not leadership. That's called assault and battery. But real servant leaders understand they're in a position to serve other people. So when you've got those 7 sides together, Jack, you've got a marvelous leader who will never be forgotten. And I think it helps men and women as they lead to know what a 7-sided leader should look like. And then they can be striving towards that goal.
What advice can you give fathers about being a servant leader within their family?
Well, it's important. You know, they're not there. They're not leading in their home by crushing and browbeating and threatening and intimidating their wife and absolutely ruling their children with a belt and a strap. I said earlier, it's a balance of discipline, and yes, there must be discipline, but don't forget the love. And children must know that they're loved. They need to be told that. I mean, for a father to say to his child, you can't tell your wife, you can't tell your children enough that I love you. And that old school, the generation, Jack, that we grew up in, you know, it was not verbalized, really, but it has to be. And so as dads, to have those words leave our lips and tell our children that they are loved, that I love you, and to say, you can't tell them enough. And if a kid knows that he's loved unconditionally with no strings attached, no matter how his behavior, that's going to make a great difference in his confidence or her self-esteem. It's going to have a huge, huge effect. It's awfully important.
You've met and studied about so many fantastic people. What do they all have in common, Pat?
Well, I've had a good time writing some books, Jack, the How to Be Like series. I've written about Michael Jordan and Walt Disney, Jackie Robinson, Coach Wooden. The first thing that comes to my mind that they've got is focus. That really seems to be the thing that hits me. They are absolutely, totally focused on what has to be done. They block out distractions. They're really zoned in. The second thing that hits me is the passion that they have for what they're doing. They are genuinely excited. Enthusiastic. They've got great energy for what they're doing. They work awfully hard. That's a common trait. Although if you're passionate about what you're doing and love what you're doing, Jack, it doesn't seem like work. And then the other thing I've noticed, they all had enormous setbacks and disappointments and heartaches, but they just wouldn't quit. Persevere, tunnel through the problems, just keep on driving, keep on going. They just would not surrender.
How do you find the time? You've been averaging 2 to 4 books a year. How do you find the time to do all of this?
It's in the flow of life, Jack. I've been gathering and collecting information for 30 years or so, knowing that someday down the road I did want to write, and I had different topics that I was interested in. Time management, I sleep a lot less than I used to, but try to utilize every minute of the day and stay close to my values. I don't waste a second of the day. And so if I sleep for 6, that means there are 18 hours that I can be focusing on and doing the things that are important.
We have 1 minute left. Final question, what advice would you give to young people today?
I'm often asked by young people, Jack, how to have a successful life, and my answer is pretty direct. Figure out what you love to do more than anything in the world, and then come up with a way to get paid for it the rest of your life, and you'll have life right by the throat. And I tell them about my life, how I fell in love with baseball when I was 7 years old, and at 22 I signed with the Phillies. Every paycheck I've gotten every 2 weeks for 44 years has come from a Major League Baseball or basketball team. Truth of the matter is, Jack, I'd have done all this for nothing. And in fact, I'd have probably paid the teams just to hang out. So I'm living proof of the importance of finding what you love to do and then come up with a way to make a living doing it, and you'll really have life by the throat.
Pat Williams, what a message. What an example to way to live a life. Thanks so much for sharing, and keep up the great work.
Jack, thanks a million. Great to visit with you, and people can always go to my website to learn more. It's patwilliamsmotivate.com.
Our guest next Sunday will be the founder of Prison Fellowship Ministries, Chuck Colson. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything truly is possible. Spall.